Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. Stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is December 4th, 2017. The year has certainly gone fast. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon. We want to thank you for joining us, and we really appreciate KEPW for being in our affiliate and carrying our show. So thanks to everybody for listening, and remember to tell your friends and family they can hear our show live on the internet. They have to go to the internet to listen to UCY.TV. Just type in UCY.TV, and then, or they can go to YouTube and listen to our podcast on UCY.TV. So now that that business is out of the way, it's odd being back on the air after such a long time. It feels like a long time. It's been a week, almost a week. I'm not particularly accustomed to this only 2 days a week thing. Certainly has given me a lot more time to breathe and think, though. I appreciate Jerome Hebert and Barry Prince for picking up the other days on our show. I think Barry's actually spinning off and going to have his own title, his own show. So Jerome Hebert and I will be carrying the weight on this show from Monday through Thursday. That's kind of a quick update on what's going on with us. But today we have with us a friend of mine and a really incredible activist for our planet, Jana Thrift, who is the manager of KEPW, and she also has a radio show that's live on that station. It's called Water is Life. So thank you, Jana, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you tell our listeners about the idea behind your show and what it's about, and actually how they can hear it and what hours you're on?
I play live on the first Friday at 7 p.m. of every month, and then Pacific Standard Time, 7 p.m. every Friday, a show plays, but the first Friday of every month, it's a live show, and then that show will replay on the third Friday, and in between, you'll be able to hear some of the archive shows. So the second and fourth, the fifth Fridays will be our shows that if you miss something, you can hear one that has already played as well. And so what made me want to have that? So basically, for me, and I'm sure many, many people in the world, water is very, very important and an incredible part of my life, both the things that I love to do ever since I was a young child. Swimming has been on the top of my list. I was raised on the ocean and the Newport, in Newport on the Oregon coast. And so I have a great love in my heart for the ocean, and just the recognition, of course, that water is life, you know, that we're made of water, we can't live without water, and how important that is. And then, of course, Standing Rock happened, and the No Dapple movement, and so in recognition of the amazing effort that was put in there to try to protect the water in that area, I really wanted to be a part of trying to continue those conversations, because what I noticed was that that movement really spurred an immense amount of conversation with people in my area and people probably all over the world that were talking about caring about water. And so I thought that it was such an important conversation. And when that movement was stifled and they were evicted up there, and it's not done by any means. I mean, there's people up there still working hard towards trying to protect the water and stop them from sending oil through that pipeline.
Aren't they actually?
Sure to say that.
Isn't the oil companies just barreling ahead anyways? Really, it's kind of like a little mini war that nobody's hearing about. They're just doing it, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the honest truth was when they were told that they had to stop until there was the environmental research done to, you know, when Obama was at the end of his term, and he, in December, he said they need to put a stop on the drilling until we finish some environmental impact research. And they kept drilling. I mean, the truth is that these companies, they have so much money that they actually put into their budget the money to pay for fines when they want to just continue doing whatever they want to do anyway. They're like, oh, it's fine. We can afford the $50,000 a day in fines to just keep going and doing it even when they're told to stop.
Like the pharmaceutical industry, they hire forensic accountants to calculate how much the death of the patients that they know are going to die is going to cost them to see if it's worth producing their drugs.
It's craziness, right?
Well, yeah. Imagine that human being accepting that job and writing the report and saying, this is how many people are going to die, but you're going to make a lot more profit, so we think it's probably a reasonable investment. I mean, we're not just talking, this is my thing, and Dr. John Goffman talked about this in Poison Power. The nuclear industry hides behind the fact that we don't know anybody's names. It's very difficult, in fact, to find out who they are and to remember their names and to remember these are people who are making decisions. It's not the corporation. These are human beings that run the corporation.
Yeah, and the sad part is that those human beings that have convinced themselves or been convinced that survival and getting that paycheck and having, you know, whatever that success means is more important than the planet itself, you know. And I mean, I think it's really a cultural piece of broken idealism. You know, what is important in life, and we've definitely gone astray quite a bit, you know?
Well, I think the big chasm for me has been the difference between ecocentric, which is earth-centered politics, or anthropomorphic-centric, which is like human-centered. Like, there's a big divide. The corporations feel like this is our planet, God gave it to us, we're the greatest species on the planet. We can do whatever we want. We can destroy all of it. And eventually, we will find solutions. That's kind of, in political science, I've learned that's called the cornucopian point of view, that we can create whatever solution to whatever problem we create. You know what I mean? So this is like this over-exaggerated optimism, essentially, is what it is. And it's the idea that we have the right to destroy the Earth. It's astounding, but that is really... And that's a lot of it is based on the Christian faith, where God says God gave man dominion over the Earth, which is quite handy to have that as your religion, because then you can go out and decimate anything you don't believe is... You know, you disconnect from every single thing that is part of the Earth. It's shocking.
Right. Except for, of course, part of that is supposed to mean our stewardship. You know,
for us and our hearts.
For it. Right? For us to be there and care for the Earth and take care of it, I think is part of what the intention of that
I think so.
Supposed to mean, I hope, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the issue. We really do have contaminated water. Like, the whole planet's water system is extremely contaminated. There's sources of pure water, but the water that most of us are exposed to has to go through something in order for us to even drink it or bathe in it or touch it. You know what I mean? I don't know about you, but I recently caught a cold after walking in the rain at school 2 days in a row. And I think this is what I call the rain cold that comes on now, because we're in the toxic stew. And I think that we need to be a lot more clever and a lot pay attention to these signals instead of... This is why, like with the nuclear taboo, everybody wants to blame everything else on nuclear... We never talk about the nuclear contamination that's coming down in the rain, but it certainly does. It certainly does come down in the rain. And there's a huge radioactive cloud up on the atmosphere that comes down every time it rains and snows.
Well, just anything that we have in our atmosphere, you know, in our environment, we're breathing these molecules. Well, it takes less than a week for you to breathe a molecule that somebody breathed clean across the planet. You know, we're all part of one Earth environment, and everything that we do affects one another. I mean, that's the part of living on this planet together. We have this thought that we kind of have our own little isolated bubbles, you know, in different places. But the truth is that, you know, I was like, wow, when I learned that in physics, that we actually breathe a molecule that somebody from the exact opposite side of the planet breathed less than a week ago. That's pretty incredible if you think about, you know, what we're sharing, you know, as far as the air we breathe and...
I didn't know it was that rapid.
I was surprised when I learned that in physics class that happened so quickly. I mean, and when it comes to the pollution in the water, I mean, I think that people really recognize that we've polluted our waters. The thing is that depending on where you're at, it's more obvious, you know. And we get pretty accustomed to drinking water that isn't necessarily clean. Like I have to admit that I found myself drinking water out of a tap in California thinking, this tastes terrible.
You should never... Nobody in the United States should drink any water out of any tap. I'm just going to say that as a blanket statement, because our entire water supply is full of nitrates and radioactivity, plus... Let's not even discuss all the pharmaceuticals that are in it. I mean, an over-the-counter water filter costs you about $80-$90. It's worth saving your pennies to buy it. And a shower filter, it's very important to put a shower filter on, because the solution in the United States that they do is they add chlorine to the water to kill everything. Well, chlorine doesn't take anything out. What it does is when it heats up, it becomes a mild form of mustard gas. That's why if you take a super hot shower and you stand in there for a long time, you come out feeling really drained because you've given yourself a mild form of mustard gas.
That doesn't surprise me. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's something. I actually sold water filters in the 90s. That's how I know. I did a lot of research on the water in our country. And actually, you can imagine the worst areas in our country for water are the people of color. The indigenous people and the people of color have actually got the worst water in the nation. But everybody's water out of your tap, honestly, is unsafe to drink if you want to protect yourself from contaminants. If you don't care about it, then go right ahead. Boil your water, because boiling your water will not get the contaminants out. You need at least a charcoal-based type of filter, which will absorb the contaminants. There was a study that showed that every single mother that they studied in the United States had fire retardant in their breast milk, whether they were vegan or meat eaters. Every single mother has fire retardant in their breast milk from the exposure to contaminants in our state of affairs. I mean, Guy McPherson talks about how we're past the edge of no return. And I guess I'm a cornucopian because I think that we can actually figure something out. You know what I mean? Like, I want to believe that we aren't at the point of absolute extinction. I want to believe that we can turn this ship around, because I want my grandchildren not to suffer. There's lawsuits going on over water rights all around the country.
Yeah. And at the very least, I mean, we can mitigate these things considerably and work much harder towards solutions. I mean, I think we put so many resources into the problem. If we were putting those resources into creating solutions and in educating people to mitigate these problems as much as possible until those solutions surface, I think in that way we can definitely turn things around. That's my personal answer.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I sort of feel like that way too. We can at least mitigate the harm that it's going to cause until we find the solutions. But the first thing we have to do is really come clean. We have to stop the nuclear taboo. I mean, and as a health physicist reminded me, and health physicists is an industry that the nuclear industry created, actually, the chemicals are far more toxic immediately than radioactivity. But interestingly enough, to create the radioactivity, That chemical contamination is part of the nuclear industry. That's something that we also don't talk about. They use a lot of chemicals that are part of the industry, and a lot of that sludge and waste is highly toxic chemicals. So much. Yeah, it's actually kind of a shock.
I mean, the truth is that the amount of chemicals we use in every single industry is shocking. It's just shocking. I mean, for even the things that we want to see as renewable, I mean, take solar panels, for example. I mean, serious amount of chemicals and degradation to the planet in order to get them, you know? And so there's, even the solutions have their drawbacks. I mean, I think it's kind of, at least the solutions we're aware of at this point. I think that there's probably a lot more options out there that we're not quite fully in touch with, because we have a situation where there's a different kind of energy being very much promoted. You know, people are making so much money selling oil and using fossil fuels that instead of even moving towards solutions, it's like they're, you know, how much can we drag out this old way and just like suck the blood, the earth's blood out until there's none left before we, you know, move to a new idea. What's really good, at least, is there are definitely places in the world we seem to be putting our feet in the ground and not willing to move forward. But there's a lot of different places in the world that are trying to move forward and are beginning to say, you know, we recognize this is old, done, and finish. Not the way that we can do things best, and moving away from fossil fuels. I like to quite a few different banks and different organizations that have seriously supported things, you know, because of the Standing Rock and the No DAPL movement, have actually disinvested, you know. And so that's the kind of thing we need to move towards, right, is convincing these people that are stuck in these old ways that it is time to change gears.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's why so many people have been disappointed in Trader Trump pulling us out of every single, you know, I mean, he's seriously rolled back a lot of the EPA regulations that were there to help our planet and to help our Earth. I mean, that's the sad part, is the United States is the biggest offender and refuses to participate in a lot of these things that could very easily, but part of it's all about the money. Show me the money. You know, when money is your God, you will eat your own babies. You know, that's the way it is.
It's just mind-blowing to me. I don't even understand how we could become so attached to money, knowing that it really, I mean, it's nothing. It's the value of money compared to a clean glass of water. I tell you, it certainly won't make up the difference when you can't get a clean glass of water. There's no amount of money that's going to change that. You know, I wrote a song, the only song I ever wrote in my life, and it, you know, Mother Ocean, deep and wide, offers more than we can buy.
Yeah, I mean, Smokey Robinson wrote a song, "Come on, honey, let's try to drink that money." You know what I mean? I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, honestly, Jenna, I want you to share with people your show, because you talk about water, but you have a very interesting take on how you do your show. It's an hour long, so why don't you explain what you do with your radio show, Water is Life?
Well, for me, one of the things that really mattered to me was, you know, to try to bring people to their heart center about water, because so many times when you listen to different shows that are trying to create active efforts towards changing things that have gone wrong, it can be depressing and kind of hard to just constantly hear how things are going so terribly wrong, you know? And so it was really important to me, because water is something that I care so much about and I have such a great love for, and I see it be a part of people's lives in so many ways, not just, you know, the fact that we must have it to survive, but also, you know, the way we connect with water as children in the river and alongside the beach, you know, and next to the ocean, and just all the different ways, you know, spiritually, water is part of so many spiritual connections, and it has so much to do with so many songs, as we both pointed out. You know, it's a zillion songs, not just about caring about protecting water or the reality of what it means to go without it, but it inspires people in just a million ways. So I really wanted to be sure to include those happy, beautiful pieces as part of my show about water, because they're such a big part of what water means to me. So I set my show up so that we start with just the sound of water, and be it the ocean or the river, and that's my intro. And then we talk about, I really stay focused in towards the heart about water, you know, whatever that may be. Last time I had a show, my granddaughter came on, and we just talked about the things she loves about water and how many ways she enjoys water, and just kind of bringing us back to that childlike heart spot. about the water experience, and then we play a water song in the middle, and then we do some news about water protection issues, and then we move towards efforts, whatever subject matter we're focusing on that have to do with water protection. And we end with another water song. So try to really embrace some beautiful songs that relate to water, as well as just really have some focus towards the parts that feel good, what is amazing and happy about the connection with water, before we move into the heavy stuff. And in some ways, I just think that it's a way to kind of be able to enjoy both sides of the water experience, and also to really connect with the part that brings us to our heart first, and helps us realize how important it is that those water protection efforts are so vital to protect those things that really matter. I guess that's,
do you ever get despondent that you feel like it's too late?
I think that it's hard not to feel frustrated with the way things are in the world. But you know, I have a different take on activism and efforts towards caring about these things maybe than a lot of people. I realized at a certain point when I first began labeling myself an activist it can be really hard to feel like you're creating, you know, that you can be successful or that you're really making an impact even, you know, and I really searched my heart about how I felt about my efforts, you know. How would you feel if I had a story told to me about a woman that was about 90 years old that a young activist woman met, and the woman said to her that she was really in despair, that when she started her activism, things were better than they are now, and she put her whole life into that, and she felt like it's just worse than ever. And it really struck me when I heard that story, and I thought, oh my gosh, how hard is that? And then I really searched my own soul about, you know, what is this about for me? And is this a huge waste of time? Or, you know, what is it that I'm doing with my life here? And one thing that I realized was that for me, I think the only thing that I will take with me to whatever comes next for my spirit is that recognition of what have I done with my, you know, what I do with my spirit on planet Earth is what I take with me. I'm not going to take money. I'm not going to take water. I'm not going to take any of the things that from this experience won't go with me. But one thing that will go with me is the knowledge that I used my life experience in a good way. And I think that is the most important thing to me, you know? And so just to recognize that I didn't turn a blind eye. I didn't ignore what I knew was wrong. You know, I was righteous towards my own belief of what is the right way to be and the right things to do. And so for me, the result of the win is a bonus, right? The idea that we could be successful is a bonus, but the idea of taking my life and doing something good with it and making sure that when I move to the next step, whatever that may be, I can look back and feel like I treated the planet in the way that I felt was the right way to be. And that's why I'm an activist.
You know, that's exactly where I came to with this radio show. because this is an alternative radio show. We're super small. In fact, I'm hoping that now that school is out, I can actually address that issue. I'm going to make a Patreon page to try to generate some funds for this radio station. Because we are sort of somewhat obscure. We're out in the Ethernet, on the Internet, and who knows? It's even because they don't track it, because we're, quote, alternative radio, there's no tracking. We can only go by the pings and the hits on our website. So we don't really know who's listening. And at one point, I was like, well, how do I know who's out there? But then I realized, you know what? This issue of ending the nuclear taboo, of stopping the Manhattan Project in its tracks, of admitting what we've done. As long as I give voice to that, and even if one person hears it and it motivates them to change their life, it's like a domino effect. It will have a ripple effect, and it's just really basically putting out loving, positive energy towards our planet and towards humanity, so that I really believe that we can knock down those huge walls that are before us, because frankly they're going to knock themselves down. I mean, this latest tax scam, I read an article in the Washington Post this weekend. The guy basically said that this tax bill that the Republicans have proffered is basically pretty much exactly what they did in 1926. And in 1929, we had the big crash, which caused the greatest depression modern world has ever known. And that is exactly what is going to happen. And in fact, he was saying that this has really been the Republican agenda. They have been after the New Deal since the get-go. They have never really accepted it. This is why they held back the reason Barack Obama wasn't as effective as he wanted to be was because the Republicans held back his agenda. We could not move things. We talk about obstructionism. I mean,
to the point they walked out of their jobs, which means, in my mind, they should have been fired.
Yeah. They did a lot of very ill. In fact, they still conduct. Our government has actually been co-opted by the industrial military complex. Let's just talk reality. If we decided, if any of our congressmen, let's say the Senate decided, hey, we're going to cut the military back by 50%, just not even 75% where it should go, but let's just say 50%, and we're going to put that money towards good use, or we're going to make the CIA budget accountable and there's no more blank check for the CIA. How many of those congressmen and senators do you think would have accidents or get cancer? I'm serious. I think 100% of them would. It's like,
I think you laugh when you're like, things are too heavy to, you don't want to cry, so you just laugh.
Sorry, I mean, Elizabeth Warren went on in a hearing last week and said, you know what, these tax cuts they're giving to the billionaires, they could forgive every single student loan debt in our nation and have money left over. For real. And we're going to give money to the top 1% of 1%, the Mercers and the Kochs and Trump and his little brat kids. Traitor Trump.
It's
I refuse
just mind
to call
blowing.
Trump. I mean, I am actually stunned at the passivity of the American people at this point. We're all just like, I personally, I don't know about you, but I'm taking to the streets on January 20th. I'm calling it Impeach Trump Day. I heard somebody online saying, hey, we're going to have a day of impeachment on January 20th. You know, that's the 1 year anniversary of the inauguration. And I'm putting it all over the internet, hashtag January 20, Impeach Trump Day, because I think we need to take to the streets like we did last year en masse to show our elected officials we're not messing around. We need these criminals out of office. And we don't really, like, it's beyond comprehension that they are even willing to defend a man who's an admitted sexual assaulter, who's now defending a child rapist and lies all the time publicly. That's the president. He has done everything to destroy our nation that he could. In less than a year, our standing as a leader in the world has evaporated. We're now friends with Duterte of the Philippines, who has massacred over 7,000 people. So
It's outrageous.
It's getting outrageous. Serious. And this is the thing about the water rights. These regulations that he is overturning, in fact, the Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act passed through the House, and it is in the Senate, although Chuck Johnson, who's going to be on tomorrow, is going to bring us an update. I've heard that it does not have any steam in the Senate. It does not look like it's going to pass in the Senate. Thank goodness for that, because there's been a lot of lobbying by all these national anti-nuclear groups that are like jumping up and down and making visits to their office and talking to, they've actually put it in their budget to go to Washington, D.C. to stop this amendment, because it basically would give water rights as well as air and land rights to private corporations who own our nuclear waste, which we are going to give to them. It's incomprehensible that this is the government of the United States doing this.
It's just outrageous, and it's embarrassing to be an American these days, I have to say.
But you want to know what, Jana? People don't know about this. Like, that's the thing. And this is, I guess this is why my show, like, I don't really look at me talking about this stuff as doom and gloom. I'm kind of like Guy McPherson says, I'm doom and happy face. Because the reality is, we're in the stew. If we don't admit where we are, we're not going to be able to manage what we have to deal with. So it's not just we can be happy about I love the water, but there's certain precautions you have to take now when you go out into the rain. You got to keep it out of your eyes, ear, nose, and mouth, as I learned myself. I got all wet and I ended up getting sick within a day and a half. And it's not just from catching the cold.
I mean, it reminds, when you talk about the nuclear taboo, you know, it reminds me of something that I really understand about anything, which is the effort to bring things into the conversation. You know, these problems exist, and we kind of have created this norm of apathy, where we recognize that these problems exist, but we go about our lives trying to survive because that's what we've been taught to do, and that's kind of what we're forced to do. But the truth is that the conversations and the more that things are talked about, the more it becomes part of what we are conscious of as something that needs attention. And by not talking about it, you give it permission to kind of just live there in the backstory. But when you start talking about these things and you put it on the table and you create some focus, then slowly it becomes more the norm to care about them and to try to relate to it and figure it out and give it attention. And it reminds me of Occupy, because what happened at Occupy was a lot of people trying to stand up. I mean, I showed up because I feel like corporate greed is destroying my planet and hurting the people and every creature on it. And so I showed up for that reason. I think a lot of people showed up for whatever reason that is a piece of that, but it all really boiled down to that. But what happened was it created spaces where it was okay for somebody to find shelter in the city. And so, of course, unhoused people came in droves because they're desperate to have a place where they can put shelter over themselves and sleep overnight and have rest, you know. And so a legal place to sleep became what Occupy was about for those people in many ways. And they showed up at the table with their own very viable issues, wanting to participate in the idea that we might be searching for solutions, you know. That was definitely true. But what happened with the issue with unhoused people becoming so much a part of that movement was it was both the sharp edge that cut into the movement. It was like, oh, you guys are only about unhoused, and all the problems that are included in being unhoused are happening And it's all Occupy's fault now because that's where it's happening. But post-Occupy, serious efforts across the nation, a lot of different things have happened to address issues about the unhoused issues, you know, about unhoused things have been all kinds of conversations, all kinds of energy in all kinds of communities. And I see the effort to address the nuclear and on all kinds of environmental issues, but nuclear, water issues, you know, Standing Rock created energy for that. And hopefully, and I believe I'm part of this, people all over are now making some efforts towards that cause. So you make some noise about something, you create it and you put energy into it and you bring it into the topic of discussion, and it gets past the piece of apathy where you've shoved it to the side and it's not being talked about. And talking about it helps bring it into focus and helps bring it into the place of reality for people of, yeah, this is something we need to do something about. And, well, and that's, so that's what I think.
You know what, my response to that is that Obama, like a good obedient servant, destroyed the Occupy movement intentionally. And the reason that we focused on the unhoused is because so many Americans lost their homes that we had an upsurge, which is going to happen if this tax scam, which we still have time to push back. But what happened in the 08 collapse was, in fact, Mnuchin, our now Treasury Secretary, intentionally scammed millions of Americans and personally was responsible for the hundreds of thousands of families being unhoused. He made millions off of foreclosing on houses in 08 and
literally
made, yeah, yes. And so yeah, what they
I'm
did
sure
was they
that was reality. Definitely
they moved
played
the
into
conversation
it.
They into this was a manipulation of the American public, and it was 100% effective, just like they do with the nuclear issue. They moved the conversation to Occupy's about the unhoused. No, it's not. Occupy was about the greed of the big banks that brought down our economy, and we weren't going to take it anymore. We wanted equity, and we wanted the rules to change. And what did Obama do? He walked in, bam, became very violent in the Occupy protest. People were very afraid. People in New York City disappeared for weeks in the police stations. People got afraid to show up at Occupy meetings. And the conversation went from equity and social injustice and these big corporations destroying our economy to, oh, Occupy is about helping the homeless, find a home, those poor people. And it co-opted the whole thing, and boom. And because nobody flocked to Occupy to make it a major, there were no more protests. There were no more public things because let's just, you know, this is the interesting thing. Last year on January 20th, millions, I think they said something like 5 million people took to the streets in the United States to protest traitor Trump. Let's just watch to see how violent the cops get on January 20th this year if we have millions of people taken to the street. Because we have had a soft shift to authoritarianism in this country, and right now we're suffering from the fact that our Republican-led Congress, forget traitor Trump, the Republican-led Congress is choosing to ignore the law, choosing to manipulate the investigations into his treason, and like Mitch McConnell over the weekend said, oh, we'll let the Alabama voters decide on Roy Moore when he had spoken out against him. He got so much negative feedback politically, paid feedback. Excuse me, I had to cough. That he's now backed his stance down, so, well, the people of Alabama can decide if they want Roy Moore, instead of standing tall and straight and saying, we are not, as a Republican Party, going to back a man who was a 32-year-old was intentionally, I mean, the violations of Roy Moore were intense. The girls that he picked on like a true abuser were all vulnerable children from broken homes. He didn't pick on children that were happy and healthy. He was a prosecutor at the time, and he would walk in and say, "I'll take care of your little girl." And he would woo little girls and make them feel like he was going to have an affair with them, when all he really did was basically just assault them. There was no wine, no flowers, no "I want to be with you." It was all just about sexual gratification, like the true abuser he is. And for Mitch McConnell to downplay any of that, and in fact, it came out quite rapidly after that many people in the Justice Department knew that he was this type of person, but in those days it was accepted that men could abuse girls and nobody talked about it. So we have got some serious comeuppance to ourselves if we do not stand up to this. Is where I'm at. Like, we may end up being defeated and we turn our country into a total authoritarian regime, Pinochet 2.0, as I said the day that traitor Trump got elected. Because to me, he looks exactly like Pinochet 2.0. We didn't have a fake military coup. We had a fake election from the very get-go, starting with the Democratic Party, sabotaging the
military. The coup was very real. It wasn't fake at all. when he took office and he started changing out and getting rid of all of the previous personnel, and Michael Moore said, "This, hello America, your country is being taken over by a coup," you know. I mean, for me, I thought, wow. I even looked up the definition of the word. I was like, wow, it's true. That's exactly what just happened.
Well, the fact that Congress allowed him to surround himself against the Constitution, they had to have special hearings to allow him to surround himself with military men, because the originators of our Constitution knew that you cannot have, first off, we were not supposed to have a standing military, but they also knew that you cannot have military men in the executive office. The president is supposed to oversee the military, but they made regulations so that his advisors could not be military. So Congress had to oversee that. What was the first thing traitor Trump did? Was he relinquished all authority. I mean, I don't know if people are aware of this, but he now allows the military to run their own show. He told them, do whatever you want. Just tell me if you just can't drop a nuclear bomb. But they have a complete, they don't even answer to him. They don't even ask him about anything. He doesn't even look at it. He lets them run their own show.
Well, I don't think he has any idea what to do, because he's not qualified to be the person running their show. And he probably is like, knows that. And so he's like, oh, you guys just do whatever you please, because I really have no idea how to instruct you anyway.
Well, no, he believes in being a little dictator, and he realizes that little dictators rely on their military to enforce his things.
Right.
And this
but
is where
he's not educated enough to be running the military, in my opinion. Like, he's not educated enough to be the president, let alone be running the military. But
he's not educated at all. Let's just be clear. He's a spoiled rich brat. He's a trust fund kid who got rich on his dad's heels, period. I mean, and this is where it gets back to the water. This is why, like, we now have Rick Perry, who is Secretary of the Energy Department, and he was the guy who said oops, who didn't remember what he wants to eliminate it. And he is essentially that's exactly what they're doing. They have rolled back so many regulations that protect our water. The harm that this administration is currently doing and has done in 1 year is going to be felt by families for generations to come. And the money, the profit that the hospitals are going to make. The for-profit medical industry that we have in this country have hit a bonanza because of the water regulations that he has turned. I mean, and I'm not saying Obama was any better, because Obama basically let a little mini war happen at DAPL without stopping it. I mean, yeah. What went on at DAPL is a war, and it is still going on, you know?
Yeah. It's an atrocity is what it is. I mean, just the idea that we can act like we care about the way we disrespected indigenous culture in our country and say that we cared about all that and then do the same thing all over again. And that is separate from the water issue. That's just the issue of respect for the indigenous people's choice on their own lands, which is very, very little, that we've, you know, given them this pittance of space to be able to live in, and we can't even give them the right to say they don't want our poison to flow underneath the river that they are on, you know? It's pretty harsh.
It's actually really incomprehensible that was allowed to happen, or that is still happening to this day.
And that thousands of people were there trying to tell the powers that be that this is not what we want. And that we can be so completely disregarded in such a way. I mean, and Occupy is another great example of that, you know. So many people. And the response isn't, wow, we have an issue that is serious enough to bring so many constituents, whatever you want to call them, up in a stand to try to say, please listen to us, this is not what we want. And the way you get the response of your representatives are to use tactics of war, basically war tactics against the people that are trying to give input about how they wish to be listened to. You know, and we're supposed to be represented by these individuals, and they're very clearly not listening to the needs of the general public or the people that they're supposed to be representing. I mean, it's pretty crazy that's the kind of situation we live in, where we're supposed to be represented by people that are actually hurting folks that try to do something like protest in a peaceful manner about things because they don't feel heard in the traditional way that we've been given as the way we're supposed to be heard. I mean, one of the things that blew my mind when I got involved with Occupy was that there's this stigma on protest and these efforts, but yet when you look at our history, these things that we're so proud to have done, a lot of it was created by those means, you know, by people standing up and saying, we want equality in different ways, you know, equality for people of color, equality for women.
Exactly. Well, you know what? That's the whole point of it is people, the assault, basically, I said this a couple years ago to Tom Ackerman, that I think that World War III, like World War II probably never really ended, because we got infiltrated by the Operation Paperclip, the Manhattan Project happened, and we have been in the Manhattan Project nonstop. So the nuclear taboo to not talk about the assault on the American people has become normalized. Like, the Occupy movement shocked people that there were so many people willing to speak out. And so what Obama did was show that even under a, quote, progressive president, that if you speak out, you are going to get rubber bulleted. You're going to get disappeared by the government. The industrial military complex has taken over to such a degree. And Trump is just blatant. The difference is he's not pretending like we have a democracy. He's like, screw right. you. You know what I mean? Like, the difference is between him and Clinton, or him and Obama, is that Obama and Clinton like to pretend like democracy really matters. Although, I do say this, 10 million people that were eligible voters in the United States did not vote at all. Didn't. Most of them didn't register. I mean, this is how the rules go. Well, less than
a democracy doesn't work very well if people don't participate.
Yes,
I mean, you have to have participation. The reason we do not have a democracy, in my opinion, is because people aren't participating. And it's, and I'm not saying that it's not been stifled and there aren't efforts to make it so that it's hard and people are apathetic for a good reason in some cases, you know, and I'm not saying they should be. I'm just saying the reason behind why they feel that way is understandable, you know, but the truth is if you take your democracy, you will have it, you know. But if you allow it to be stripped of you and you go the other direction, thinking that what matters most is that you are a good economic slave, you know, that you figure out, and that's not how people are looking at. Obviously, people are looking at the desperation to have a roof over their heads so that their kids have food on their table. You know, that is what economic slavery really looks like, right?
That, but although I do think this issue of water is going to be the turning point, because when people get desperate, they rise up, and it's almost like Waterworld, right? Or what was that movie called? Waterworld, I think it was. You know, when people need their water, we like in Flint, you know, people have gone to jail in Flint. I mean, this is a serious crime that's happening across America that is going unchecked. And I think that it's really important for us to continue to talk about the water issues, for us to talk about the contamination, because it's so much more comfortable just to, like, not deal with it and go to the doctor when we get sick and blame ourselves for all the food that we eat, or blame ourselves for eating the chemicals and the junk food. I mean, it's an interesting little mix that some, I don't know if they did it intentionally, if it was just like, the 100th monkey idea among the mega polluters, was they all just started polluting our environment in the 1900s, and our government did nothing to stop it. Nothing. And so now we have our food supply, our water supply, everything is just basically toxic. And to find the solutions is going to cost money, and they'd rather have us just die. Let's pare down the population. Now, some people think that's intentional. I don't know if it is intentional, but they probably are licking their lips going, yeah, let's make as much money as we can. And then they'll have enough money when the rest of us just die off, when the, what do they call us, the unwashed masses, you know, when we kick the butt. I mean, it's such a cacophony of problems. It's unbelievable.
For me, I think it's just part of the life experience as well. You know, to recognize, you know, these are the choices that we're given, and to figure out how to maneuver through this life experience and recognize there's things that are seriously wrong, and there's an amazing amount of beauty and the blessing of life itself, you know. And so you've got to step up and protect the things that matter, and you've got to appreciate the things that are beautiful, and you have to recognize when you see evil and call it what it is, you know. I mean, it's
and on
it's
that,
very
Jen,
important.
I have to jump in. I think those are good ending words. We have about 8 seconds. You've been listening to Jenna Thrift from with Waters of Life, a manager of KEPW. Put your courage feet on, you guys.